to A Jungian and a Witch podcast. I'm your co-host, Molly, the queen behind Queen of Cups Apothecary and your resident witch. This is my dad, Steve, a Jungian analyst with over 30 years experience, a master's in divinity, and a myth expert. Join us as I get the Jungian perspective on a wide range of witchy topics. Welcome to another episode. Today, Dad and I are taking on a really big topic, the unconscious. We'll try and cover as much as we can, but I am sure we'll be back to talk more about this one. We're going to talk about the personal unconscious, the collective unconscious, the id, the ego, our instincts, and our cats. So I hope you enjoy our conversation, and I'll see you on the other side. Back to another week.
Here we are.
Here we are. So I did want to bring up, I realized that I was listening to one of my favorite podcasts, a bunch of favorite podcasts actually, and I realized that they do something that we haven't been doing, and that's mainly that they have like this like 5 minutes of banter before they go into their topic. Your face. I wish people could see it.
I grew up in a television studio. So that's called the talking heads, the two shot.
Yes.
When we were in England, I was surprised that, you know how they banter in the news and especially the morning news. I mean, I realize you don't watch the morning news. We're old. No. We watch, you know, news. It was very disappointing that in England they had the same banter on their morning news show as American shows.
Oh, no, they do?
Yeah.
You thought it'd be like, you know, better banter?
Real news, yes. But at least because they're British, it was funnier.
Okay, yeah. Yeah. At least to us, I guess. It's coming from America.
I'm not sure being funny is my thing, so
it's not, but it just gives people a chance to get to know us a little bit outside of the material, and so I thought I'd bring something for us to banter about for a few minutes before, because I know small talk isn't really your thing.
If you insist.
But what I want to talk about just real quick, we've got our first listener email, and I'm really excited about this, and thank you so much for reaching out, Mia. She says that she really is enjoying our podcast and that it's helped her really understand some of these concepts that we've been talking about. It's been really clarifying for me too. And she wanted to know, so she said, you were trained at the Boston Jung Institute, and is that the same as the New England Institute? Has it changed? And so I'm wondering if that has changed since then, or if it's a different one.
Is this the part where I'm supposed to banter?
Oh, well, you could just tell me about the Jung Institute a little bit. I feel like we should record the video on these because your face is priceless sometimes.
Oh, thank you. yes, it's the same. And okay. We changed names a couple of years ago because of the corporate governance structure and to a new one. So it's the same. I mean, there is only one Jung Institute in Boston. So there you go.
Okay. So there we go. I also saw a thing on Instagram and TikTok when I was looking up material, and they have this new thing called a Jungian coach. And it says it uses Jungian psychology principles to help people find their life path. And you can get this coaching certificate. It says it takes 60 hours to get a Jungian coaching certificate.
You know what? How many? 60 hours?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, that sounds easier than 10 years.
I just wanted to bring that up to you and let you know that it exists.
It took me 10 years from 1987 to 1997.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, some people can do it a little bit faster, but they can't do it in 60 hours for sure.
Do you know that the coaching is a TikTok thing too, right? I mean, promote your coaching services, and then I guess I have no idea if that's helpful to someone or not. It's not analysis.
Yeah, definitely.
And I would say that there's a little bit people, when they get started, they want to grow faster. It's like, why is this taking so long? I want to
Right, yeah.
grow faster. And I keep telling people, you can't make the tree grow faster.
Right. It just takes time.
It grows the way it grows. So, okay. Was that decent
Was that enough
banter?
banter? I knew you were going to give me so much pushback on that. Not a banter person. I know. Okay. Well, we'll round it out by saying thanks again to Mia for writing to us. If anybody else feels like writing to us and asking us some questions, that would be amazing. We'd love to hear from you.
Right, but no banter questions, please.
It's just a legitimate question you can answer, I feel like you would do better with that.
That's true.
That's true. See, I'm trying to make it easy for you. Okay. Whew, let me take a breath here. We'll go into our topic. All right, Dad. So today we have a topic that we've touched upon a lot, and I realized we haven't given it its own episode yet, and that is the unconscious. And I know it's going to be hard to wrap that into an hour episode, but we talked about it a lot in Shadow. I think it was very much from the shadow perspective, and I think it needs its own, just its own episode. So I think we should start with what is the unconscious? And again, tried to look into this on the internet.
And
It was so hard to get any sort of useful definition from anyone. And it basically, the best I could get is unknown driving factors in our life. Like that was really it as far as definitions go.
Ooh.
Yeah, everything else was really not useful in a lot of ways. I did find one paper that was like the second thing to come up that's from PubMed. And it's
Oh
just
my.
somebody doing research on the unconscious mind. I read the beginning part of it, and it's like the conscious, it says conscious centric bias is due to the part of operational definition within cognitive psychology that equates unconscious with subliminal. And I guess that was kind of one of the closest things I could get to a real definition, but it's, I don't think subliminal is not really the right way of thinking about it. So
Subliminal is a small aspect of the unconscious. Subliminal, right? Latin, below the threshold. Limnus
right.
is the threshold, just below the threshold. So yeah, subliminal is that which could be conscious. It's not hard to make it conscious, but it is out of awareness. And so subliminal is a Jedi mind trick of advertising, for instance. A lot of subliminal stuff going on.
The meaning
And,
underneath the
right.
meaning,
And
right.
so then if you become more conscious, your Jedi mind tricks will not work on me.
Because I know what you're trying to say underneath the threshold there. Yeah. Okay. I do like that. But so let's go into unconscious. What is, especially, I wanted to know more of like the history about it, because I know there's myths going way back about the unconscious. So I thought maybe we could talk about that and how we came to understand the unconscious as we do today.
Oh my.
I know it's a lot.
So during those algos, that you looked, and I on my History of Ideas video channel, that's my main project, right? Is the history of the unconscious.
Yeah.
supposed to be 10 episodes and three are up. Each one is an hour long. So there you go. Take me 10 hours to talk about this. But I'll
Cliff
give
Notes
you
version.
the Cliff Notes
Okay, good.
version. So the idea of the history of the unconscious, I mean, when I'm doing that video, I mean, let's just start with the word the unconscious,
Right.
which is a bit of an English translation of the German word, because the term the unconscious was in German, and the first use of the term das Unbewusstsein, back to your German, was in the year 1800
Oh, okay.
by Friedrich Snelling, who
Snelling.
Snelling, yeah, he was, well, one of the post-Kantian German philosophers.
Nice.
It is interesting to think that actually all of psychology, before there was psychology, was originally in philosophy. Philosophy was the place where people talked about our motivations and what makes us do things. It was in philosophy. And it is in that time period, starting in 1800, that psychology begins to be its own thing and separate from philosophy. So that's the origin of, even in 1800, Snelling is coming up with this concept of a very neutral term, that which is not conscious, right? See, the unconscious is a negative term, that which is not conscious.
I mean, that makes sense, yeah.
So as we move forward in history, famously, Freud, then in 1900, 100 years later, is very much talking about the unconscious in his book, The Interpretation of Dreams. So now, as I said in several episodes past, we don't use the term subconscious, underneath of consciousness, except that, especially for Freud, it certainly seems that way. We're talking about there is this big thing underneath our conscious awareness, and that we don't know it. Obviously, we have no awareness, no conscious awareness. So originally, Freud was pushing the idea, well, what is in, what it's called, what are the contents of the unconscious?
Okay, the contents.
That you can't know and can't see. It's a bit of a conundrum, right? So originally, Freud thought that the unconscious consists of things that were once conscious and have fallen into the unconscious as an out of awareness. And it's a little bit like the basement. Like everything in the unconscious used to be up on the upstairs floors, and then it has been locked in the basement. And that the reason that the stuff is put down there is because of repression. So this is very big in Freud, the idea
It's
of
the repression.
there is a function called the sensor that censors what is able to come into our awareness.
So that's like a, like your brain has like a thing that sensor
Yeah,
and it
you well, and I
filters.
mean, in filter, that's a very good word for it. It's a filter, and for Freud, it's the idea that the job of the filter is to protect the ego from disturbing thoughts and ideas. Disturbing thoughts
He
and
does
ideas.
that. Everything is about keeping you safe from disturbing ideas with Freud.
Yes.
Like everything he does, it's like, well,
Well,
so we
when
don't.
you think of the Victorian era,
There was a lot of disturbing things going on, yeah.
well, but that no one could talk about them, or and then with repression, then no one, not only could you not talk about it, you couldn't be aware of it.
You couldn't even think about
It was
it.
kind of an absolute denial. And then to give Freud his due is that he's breaking through the denial of an entire Victorian culture.
He's saying, no, these things are here. You're just repressing them.
Well, and remember, what is What is the main thing that is in there?
Oh, with Kant, is he want to kill your mother? Not Kant, Freud. You
Freud
want to kill
is,
your mother, right? Isn't that always
well,
the
yes,
Yeah.
but because of sex, right?
Oh, right. Everything's a sexual drive.
And
The
that,
monotony, right? The monotony of
monotony of interpretation, right?
rotation, yeah.
And then, but you could see how that would be a pretty disturbing thought for a Victorian person.
Right, in particular. No. They would just implode on the spot.
And then just to do the cliff notes real fast, I mean, Freud started with that, but some other psychologists, including Jung, even when he was with Freud, were beginning to talk about instinct. And instinctual function and saying, well, that has to be a part of psychology is instinct. And yet we're unaware of how instinct is influencing our thoughts, behaviors. We're unaware that we're engaged in an instinctual pattern, so that there must also be instinct in the unconscious.
I did remember seeing when I was looking it up, there was they noted that in it says it was one of the first big like times it was used a lot, and it was Darwin talking about unconscious natural selection, like how it's unconscious,
Yes,
which I thought that was cool.
so
But that goes back to instinct also,
that goes
because he's
back that
talking with
goes
animals.
that that goes back to instinct, and that's in the 1840s into 1850s, 1860s. And I have a video at the episode in which Freud, after 1900, I think about 1920, starts to raise the idea of the primal horde.
The primal horde.
Yeah, I have an episode on that, and
What is that, like kill the witch or whatever? Like
this is Kill the Father.
kill the father.
Yes, that the Freud is imagining what early human beings were like without being civilized. Right. In other words, all those early humans who were not Victorians.
Right, they must have just wanted to kill each other all the
Well, because that's what is in the unconscious.
Right, yeah, when you're Freud, everything goes back to sex or murder.
Right. So Freud was getting pushed about it. There's more in the unconscious than just repressed personal memory. Like there's a great deal more in the unconscious. It's not, I mean, yes, there is repressed personal memory, as a matter of fact, but there's a great deal more than that, of
It's
which
just a little wedge of
of
the whole
which
thing, yeah.
instinct. And so in 1920, Freud concedes to
Oh.
say, okay, now we're going to have a, it's called a tripartite model of the unconscious, three, and that's the famous id, ego, and superego. But he still, and so the id would be that instinctual unconscious that we're talking about, the id. Except for Freud, I mean, it's, we can't know anything about it except that the nature of the id is, his term, polymorphous perversity. That's what's in the deep
That's all
unconscious.
there is. It's just
Yes. And so about the same time, Jung is describing the unconscious as the matrix of mythopoetic imagination.
Whoa, that's a fun term.
It
Say that
is,
one more time.
oh,
The myth
matrix of mythopoetic imagination.
of a mythopoetic imagination. That
Which,
is
well,
I like that.
the mythopoetic imagination is essentially where all of our creativity comes from.
Yeah.
Uh,
That's a
and
that's fun.
and all myths and all symbols, and they all come from this aspect of the unconscious. I used that in a lecture I had done just to show the difference in the attitude towards the unconscious that Freud had and Jung had, right?
Freud
So
like has this a disdain for the unconscious.
and a kind of a fear, like
Yeah.
it's
Dark
dangerous,
and deep,
dark,
and we
and
don't want to go there.
that's right.
Keep it repressed. Keep it repressed.
Keep it well, the ego struggles. And then Jung has this very different attitude
Yeah, creativity and
of
poetic
a kind of a
and
beauty. Although Jung does not at all, deny
the
the
darkness. Yeah.
darkness. See, and then this is it's a little complicated, right? I mean, darkness has a tendency to have moral overtones.
Right. Yeah, it does.
All this splitting of light and dark and
Yeah.
good and bad.
Yeah, and the association with dark being bad and light being good, that's something
That's
we've been dealing with in the witch community too, because people are light witches or dark witches, or you're a white witch or you're a black witch, and
wow.
not any sort of racist tone, but it's traditionally been like white witches adhere to
It's
the
a
rule of
good witch,
three.
right?
Well,
And
yeah, and they express karma to
Glinda
help.
is the
Yeah,
good
it's the
witch,
good witch. Yes,
and
exactly.
what's her name is the Wicked Witch of the West.
Right. And they, yeah, but we're trying to move away from those terms, because, and then, a dark witch is somebody that works with dark, quote unquote, dark magic. But it's like, why do we use light and dark, and why are, those terms have, sort of racial connotations, especially with the history of hoodoo, which is from, Louisiana and African American. And so calling that dark just seems really like racist.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've been the whole witch community has sort of decided that we're getting rid of those terms and we're not going to use that anymore. Now
So
we call
that's
it
a.
baneful magic instead.
Oh, what does that mean? Baneful.
Baneful, sort of with the intent of harm.
Of course. Wow. Yes.
So it's a big thing whether or not you do baneful magic or not in the witch community.
Well, you see, that would be like the id, wouldn't
Right.
it?
It would.
The intent to harm.
Yeah.
So you can see why actually choosing this very neutral term,
Right.
unconscious,
Yes. Yeah.
it
It's way
is
better than
not,
sub.
neither light nor dark, neither up nor down, neither good nor bad, just
Exactly.
not conscious. And then, as far as we were talking about the instinctual
Yeah.
unconscious, you see, then do you say, is instinct good or bad? Is instinct light or dark?
Oh,
And
neither, yeah. It's
right.
just instinct.
Well, the lion on the savanna plains in East Africa, is that bad? What the lion does? Is it
Yeah, hunting, killing.
evil for the antelope? Thinks that lions are evil?
Probably, yeah.
Well, see what I mean? And then, I mean, to take it back to humans, I mean, human instincts, again, they're bad, they're good. It's like, well, we need instinct to function, even though, again, we're unconscious of it, we're not aware of it. For instance, in one of my videos, I mean, this aspect of the unconscious is a bit in the nature nurture debate, because when you talk about nature, you mean instinct,
Instinct, yeah, for sure.
right? And that then nurture is sort of conscious cultural learning, or what is handed down from your parents, so, or at least, we need this other distinction. So Jung starts to make the distinction about 1922 between the idea of a personal unconscious and another word for this instinctual unconscious starts to be the collective unconscious.
Yeah, which is an awesome term.
Because instinct by definition would be collective, because it's all humans of that species. share a common instinctual foundation.
Right.
But the personal unconscious then, and then you would say, I mean, nowadays psychology that isn't Jungian, it only deals with the personal unconscious, which is, that's where everything, trauma, issues with your parents, issues with relationships, that's all in the personal unconscious, in the sense is that all of that is a reflection of your personal history.
Yeah, your experiences. Yeah.
And that, yes, those experiences leave a mark.
Right.
In the unconscious, in the sense that you're unaware until you do the work, like you remember a thing happened. And, well, yeah, I don't know. It was bad, but yeah. But you have no way of appreciating, actually, it did something.
It does. Yeah, and like after you get in a car accident, and then every time you come up to a stop sign, you kind of freak out and you have to wait for make sure everybody else is gone before you go through, because that's my own experience.
Oh, I had a bad one. We were turning left to get on the interstate, and, you know, waiting at the light, and left-hand turn arrow, green arrow comes, and there were at least two cars in front of us, and they start turning left, and this guy comes blowing through the other side. He's going to blow right through the traffic light.
Whoa.
Full speed.
Yeah.
And we're turning left, and your mom was driving. I was in the passenger seat where he was. I was.
Oh, you were about to get hit.
Smashed.
Yeah.
And instead of hitting the brakes, she gunned it.
Yeah.
Like she floored it.
Mom's got good instincts. Talk about instincts.
Somehow, we went fast enough that
he didn't hit you guys.
He didn't. So yes, I still have a PTSD, is what we're talking about.
Yep.
Reaction to a left-hand turn.
Right. Yeah, mine's stop signs.
See?
Yep.
Okay. That's your personal unconscious. I mean,
exactly. But your body reacts. Like, I'm not consciously, when I roll up to a stop sign, I don't consciously go, I better wait and make sure. My body just goes, nope. Yep. There's not a choice in that at all.
And then, so in the Jungian circle, the personal unconscious is also sometimes called the Freudian unconscious.
We're just putting all this on Freud.
Well, because that's what Freud is talking about until the concept of the id comes in. But it's true. I mean, we have a personal unconscious, and I think it's not only human beings. In my video, I talk about my cats.
Yeah.
That they have a personal unconscious and they have a collective unconscious or instinctual behavior.
Yeah.
But our one cat, Misty, big black cat, you know, when we picked them up at the rescue, they could tell us, you know, a little story about our cats.
Yeah.
And I happened to know that Misty was with a cat lady with 30 other cats.
Oh, wow.
And so he wasn't neglected or anything, but he didn't have a lot of interaction with humans.
Right.
And was very self-sufficient, you know, always just on his own. and that he eats super fast. He inhales his food.
Right. Competition with the other kitties.
There were some, if he didn't eat, the other cats
he didn't get food,
and that continues to this day. So you see how that's his personal unconscious, because he had that experience, and that was his childhood.
Right, he grew up like that, so it just lasted.
Whereas Melissa, our other cat, which we got there too, was part of a litter of a feral cat mom.
Okay.
So,
feral kitty.
Yeah, Melissa was just in a cage, you know, after the cat came in.
Right. Okay.
And so, you know, Melissa is the typical scaredy cat.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
very suspicious of anything that moves faster or any people that are unpredictable. And also, Melissa eats slowly. You
Right,
know,
right. Didn't have the competition.
right. That's a personal unconscious.
It is, yeah. What I find
But
interesting though,
both.
my kitten does the same thing though. 'Cause so she didn't have that experience. She my kitten was born with it was a cat that had gotten out and got pregnant, so she is like half feral. And we got her when she was like 5 weeks. And so she didn't she's only really known us, but she still eats her food really fast. Like she has competition when she's never had competition before. So I feel like the feral cat instinct is in there because she's very much and the, she's the most fearless cat I've ever met. She will get in the bathtub with you. She like is not afraid of water or anything. And
Wow.
so I don't know if that's part of her growing up with us or if that's just feral kitty genetics, but
Well, let's see, you bring up a point that I bring up in the video. If we're going to talk about, you know, nature and nurture, that you, if you think that your kitten has then taken over these traits of a feral cat because of the mother, right? That's called epigenetics.
Oh, right. Okay. Epigenetics. Right.
That the thought that the experiences of a parent can be transmitted to offspring.
I can. Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's not Darwin.
No, it's something
That's
else.
there's a term that it's called Lamarckism by
Lamarckism?
a French biologist
Huh.
who had a very different idea than Darwin. And he was saying, well, no, you inherit the experiences from your parent. And his famous example was the giraffe. And then
Oh.
it's like, well, how did a giraffe neck get so long? He said, well, that's because the original mother stretched her neck and went up. And because she did that to her neck, that it was passed along to her offspring, who
Okay.
stretched the neck
Their
further,
neck and
and then
yeah.
generation after generation, and that's how. And the answer is
Huh.
no,
Well, yeah.
no.
Takes a long, long time for that to happen.
Darwin is, you know, the genetic part
Yeah.
is that there is a glitch in which some giraffes have longer necks than other
Yeah.
giraffes.
Well, and
And
it's also about natural selection because the giraffe with
well,
the longer neck has an advantage over the giraffe with the
it's
shorter
called,
neck.
right, selection pressures.
Yes, selection pressures.
So that a glitch is a glitch is a glitch. It's just in certain environments, a glitch might be helpful or not helpful.
Exactly, yeah.
And that's part of it. So what does this ha have to do with the unconscious? And it is, again, that instinctual part. How do we inherit behaviors?
Right. Well, and one other thing that I find really interesting, my somatics teacher has a story that he tells about how he's always been afraid of planes and he didn't know why. Like he couldn't go on a plane without having like an immense panic attack, but he never personally had any issues with airplanes. And then he found out his grandfather almost died in a plane accident. And so somehow that fear,
Speaking
without anyone telling him that that was a thing, he was still afraid of it.
see, speaking of epigenetics,
Yeah, that's I find that very fascinating.
or he inherited low serotonin from his grandfather, and that leads to anxiety and panic disorder
Anxiety.
and panic
Okay.
disorder.
But why would it specifically be about one thing like that? Like
Oh,
you're fine all other modes of travel, but you get in a plane and you're like, nope.
a phobia is a phobia is a
That's
phobia.
true, I guess,
There's a list of phobias somewhere, you know, there's,
yeah.
and everybody who
Flying's
had, who,
scary too, man. You gotta release control. You're
well,
not in control when you're flying. Like,
that's part of it, right? That claustrophobia, you know, fear of flying is a form of claustrophobia,
Claustrophobia.
is, Yeah, the panic at the loss of control.
I can see that.
And again, now is that in the unconscious? And the answer is yes, it
Right.
is.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. It's that until you know, you just think you're the only one who has this
Right.
fear.
And then you
And
find out that you're not.
that's right. See? So that's in the unconscious too, you know, everything. And then Jung was among the first, and very early Jung, before he met Freud, when he was still working in the psychiatric clinic, that the suspicion that there might be an organic basis for many psychological disorders. No one had had
That
that
makes
idea
sense.
before, that something about the brain, there's an organic basis that is causing these symptoms.
Wow. He was the first one to think about that?
Particularly in schizophrenia. So he suspected already in about 1904 that there was an organic basis to schizophrenia, that it was not caused by having a schizophrenic mother. Like
But did they?
that's what causes schizophrenia, you know, is that your
Right.
mother, what she did, you know. And really,
Right.
this it I mean, even when I was in training 30 some years ago, we were taught that the OCD is caused by the mother.
Really?
Yes. Now
Whoa. That wasn't
it's
even that long ago.
no, it's laughable now, right? I mean, it's
Is.
utterly laughable
Did they
because
know about things like hormones and stuff like that? Sorry to cut you off, but
no,
back in
still
1904, did they know
oh
about
no.
hormones and the regulation and stuff like that? No.
Nope.
Okay, that makes sense. All right,
No.
what were you going to say? Sorry.
I was going to say that right, whatever, 35 years ago or like that. This was before sort of, let's say, serotonin theory. But it's very clear that OCD is organic. That's what it means, that it's a brain condition. It has nothing to do with your mother. So that there you go, is that so that's another aspect of the unconscious, is the organic basis of our functioning in the world. And again, you don't know that, oh, this organic condition is causing something and can cause something to happen. So there's a dissociative condition in which a person can black out, lose time, have complete amnesia. And when I worked in the state mental hospital, you know, the police would bring people there off the streets, and we had this one guy, and no ID, no name. He couldn't tell us who he was. Total amnesia. We had this hot young doc from Vanderbilt, and he said, "Oh, it's B9."
Oh,
The
he was
vitamin.
deficient in B9.
And he got this big syringe, you know, and
Whoa.
stuck him in the butt. And within about 6 hours, he was back to normal.
Whoa. Because of a B9 deficiency?
Speaking of
Whoa.
organic disorders, see.
That's really mind-blowing.
And I was like, wow, I'm going to be sure and take all my B vitamins because, like,
It just proves that is very, very important for your brain health. Oh my
to
God.
take B vitamins.
Well, I'm gonna have to do more research into B9 specifically because,
That's
oof.
called fugue syndrome, by the way. It's a
Yeah, I
that's
knew there was
a
a word for that. Fugue.
that's a one of the dissociative disorders. But none of this is the fun stuff yet. I mean, we're just talking about, but all of this is in the unconscious. The instinctual part, the organic part, the personal part, repressed memories, that all then manifest themselves in our lives without us exactly knowing what we're doing or why we're doing it. It's like, well, why did I do that? I don't know why I did it. Like that. Okay. Jung invents another concept to talk about what's in the unconscious, and it's a concept everybody's heard of. It's called a complex.
A complex, yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Like a fugue state would be a complex, or.
I think if it's an organic basis, it's not a complex, but
But like schizophrenia.
schizophrenia is. But
It's just.
back in the day, since they didn't know anything about organic basis of something, that yeah, they were all complexes. Well, after Jung, Freud just used the term neurosis. I mean, that's right. So there's neurosis and psychosis, which are again disturbances of conscious mental functioning. And then Jung starts to add the term a complex. So what is a complex? And I'm like, do you have a complex? Do I have a complex? It's like,
Does
yes,
everyone have a complex?
everybody has complexes, not just one, right? The technical way that Jung talks about it is a feeling-toned pattern.
Feeling-toned pattern.
Right. So the idea to me is that at the center of every complex is a center of gravity. So that, and that it's emotional. Like it's emotion. That's the feeling toned part, right? That it is a has a big emotional core. It's a little bit in the personal unconscious. So in a way, a complex is kind of like PTSD is a complex because there was a thing that happened that is this emotional core.
That makes sense.
But in a way, it's also collective in the sense that there are common complexes that everybody has, regardless of your personal experience, let's say. But I like the idea of an emotional core
What's a
that
complex that's universal?
the mother complex, the father complex, the inferiority complex, that's Adler, not Jung, and the
Inferiority.
Oedipal complex, that's Freud, not Jung, of which Jung said, oh, well, yeah, Freud discovered the Oedipal complex, and he thinks it's the only one.
He's very limited, very narrow in his viewpoints. But okay, so I find that really interesting. So we have this core emotional thing,
So
and then a complex like develops around it.
tell people that it's just like a black hole, a complex, which is that, do you know what the event horizon of a black hole is?
Well, I do after watching Interstellar.
Interstellar, exactly. That's right. So right, the event horizon is that point at which no matter what you do, you cannot pull out of it. The gravity is too strong. And if you cross that boundary, then all that can happen is eventually you will be pulled down and through the center of the black hole.
Correct, yeah.
Which is what happens in the movie. You're absolutely right. And a complex is just like that. It's like if you get triggered, to use the word, right? Like that is the pull of the gravity of the complex.
We're going down.
And you have a very, very short window to consciously recognize you've been triggered. Very
That makes
short,
sense.
like as in you may have 5 seconds to recognize what's happening and pull out of it. See, that's like the black hole,
Yeah, I
which of
see.
course, before you do any psychological work, I mean, you have no idea, and you just get sucked in the hole. I mean,
Right,
that's
you don't even know that it's happening. It's
you're
just
and
there.
Jung says in the long run, the ego is a complex also. The ego itself is a complex. But when you're pulled into this other complex, now your ego is gone. And you are gone. You are just everything you say is coming out of the complex. It's the complex acting, speaking, behaving now. So, for instance, let's say anger. This guy has an anger management
Problem.
problem. And it's true. I always tell people that that is actually Hulk. I mean, and it is, in
The
fact,
Hulk.
the story of Hulk is a picture of a complex.
That makes sense. Yeah.
So that, yes,
He gets triggered and then
yeah,
just
there's Bruce Banner, he's the ego.
Right.
But when he gets triggered and then he goes down the black hole, he has no memory. He you know,
Right. He just becomes the Hulk. Yeah,
and then
yeah.
he wakes up in a field somewhere with
Naked
his
somewhere.
clothes
Yeah.
on and says, "What did I do this time?" Right?
Exactly. Well, and that's why his whole story arc is trying to control that threshold,
Right.
right? Yeah.
Yes, well, and I guess in the recent movies they have him being Hulk while also being Bruce Banner. I mean,
Yeah, they yeah,
that's
he integrates the
right.
two.
Well, so there is, I mean, there's the integrating of the complex, but I think you can't in the long run eliminate a complex. You can only become aware of it and depower it to some extent, but that again requires this thing of you start to be aware of being triggered,
Right, it's the awareness part.
and then you learn some strategy to do something different than to go down the hole.
Yeah.
So that also reminds me that the complex is like the old AA story. This, you know, in AA they talk about this all the time, and that's the story of the hole in the street.
The hole in the street.
Yes. So
Okay, I don't know this one.
that's also just like a complex. Well, it's the idea that you know, there's a guy, he's going to work and he's listening to a podcast, you know,
Sure.
and they're doing construction and they dug a hole and he falls in the hole.
Oh.
And then, you know, it takes time and all this stuff to get him out of the hole like that. And then the next morning, same thing, he's walking to work and headphone on, and he falls in the hole. And then he says, "Oh, right, there's a hole. I forgot there's a hole in it." And then the next day he falls in the hole.
Oh gosh.
Until
Eventually he learns,
one
yeah.
day he's getting right to the place, and then he says, "Oh, right, I remember there's a hole here." And he walks a different direction.
Okay,
See, that's
yeah.
the
It's the awareness,
doing
yeah.
something different. It's like when you fall into the complex, every time you're falling in, you're stepping to the right. Eventually, with awareness, you can learn to step to the left.
Right.
And then you don't
Yeah.
have to go into the black hole. But again, there's a window before, once you pass the event horizon, no matter what you do, you're going to
Yeah.
fall in the hole.
Okay. Well, it's a very
So,
useful analogy.
yeah, and I use that. I use Hulk and everything with anger management people because it's just like that, right? So,
Yeah.
see that.
Yeah.
So that's unconscious, right?
It is.
Until it isn't. I mean, but think of how much work it takes to make it conscious.
Yeah, to be aware that these things are happening. It takes a lot of practice, for
And
sure.
so let's say, how conscious are people really?
I mean,
And
10%?
when we say conscious, right, I think we have to, I have to use the term ego consciousness, because consciousness is a whole problem in and of itself. What is a consciousness? But
Right.
that's for another episode, because today we're
Yeah.
talking about the unconscious.
Unconscious. Yeah. Put that down for another episode.
So to have ego consciousness, right, I would say, yeah, something like 10%. The rest of our day, we're 90% unconscious. In that,
Autopilot,
when
yeah.
you're on autopilot, that means the complexes
Right, are running the show.
are running the show, the instincts are running the show, and you're completely unaware. And so when things happen, it feels like there's no rhyme or reason. It's like, so then you're the kind of, I just live and these things happen to me and I don't know why they happen and I don't like it. I wish it would stop happening, but it happens. What can I do? See what I mean?
Right.
Right. Like
That's so.
the guy has a
Falling in
panic
the hole.
and the
Oh,
panic attack, you know,
panic
getting on an airplane.
attack.
Well, what can I do? And it's like, well, actually, there's some things you could do.
Well, and I think getting that awareness is definitely the first step. Like recognizing you have a problem, right, is always the first step in fixing the problem.
Yes, it is. And then we haven't talked about the archetypes of the unconscious.
The archetypes of the unconscious. Now that I think we're getting into some of the mythic stuff too now, hopefully, right?
Well, is I think what we had an episode on archetype, right?
We did. We had episode of archetype, we had episode on shadow.
Right. So now we just have the idea of the unconscious, so that, like, again, what are the contents of the unconscious? And we talked about all the personal stuff and the trauma stuff, and that's the personal side. We've talked about the instinctual stuff, instinctual functioning. Now, Jung sort of puts together this idea that in the deeper unconscious, that is a parallel to instinct, are patterns of functioning. Again, like we talked about in the episode, right? It's like the crystalline lattice that we talked about. There is an underlying pattern that shapes something into a form. But when it crystallizes, it's already not the archetype. It has become a specific thing. Our archetype is a form of a pattern. And that also is, we're unaware of it until we're there. So Jungians talk about that as constellating an archetype.
Constellating, like a constellation, constellating.
It's sort of evoking it or getting in a situation that now starts to parallel the pattern. And then once the pattern starts to constellate, then unconsciously, you have to go through the entire pattern. And that way it's like a complex, right? So we've talked about the hero's journey. So, well, how is that constellated in a person's life? I mean, is everybody on a hero's journey? And I'm sorry, that's too milquetoast for me. No, everybody is not on a hero's journey. Until you start to do the things,
The things,
then you're on a hero's journey, but not until. And again, the archetype of the hero is constellated, let's say, certain events constellated, and then you begin to follow the pattern. And fairly unconsciously, like the hero goes through trials, the hero goes through the separation from home, the hero has to face herself.
They have some sort of grand mission they end up having to
And then
quest.
sort of a denouement moment, right? The moment in which either the hero succeeds or fails. And FYI, right? Like, that is Luke Skywalker, intentionally, that George Lucas read The Hero with a Thousand Faces,
And then made
and
Luke.
read about Joseph Campbell's description of the hero's journey, and intentionally made. So the first three are the journey,
So the constellated part, what that would be like when Luke's aunt and uncle's house like burns down. Like he doesn't really have a choice anymore, and he sort of unconsciously then has to go on this journey.
It's the background. You could say it's really constellated when Obi-Wan comes. So again, let's say this figure of the wise old man, the archetype of the wise old man, the wise old woman, somebody comes into your life. See how unconscious it is? It's like you will begin to relate to this person as the archetype of the wise old man.
It just happens.
whether you're aware of it, you're doing it or not, it doesn't matter. It's constellated.
Yeah, I see that.
And then the pattern is going to play out. Let's say, I mean, an archetype is not a human being. And, you know, we talked about that with anima and animus and all the things. So there's is a little bit this danger of that the archetype is constellated, but you know, Obi-Wan is just a guy. He's just a man.
He's just a dude. It's been through a lot.
As opposed to saying he is the wise old man. So this brings us back to another kind of complex pattern. Let's say Dorothy and the Wizard of Oz. That was one of my first published papers, Dorothy and the Wizard of Oz, an analysis of a case of hysteria.
You published a paper that's
Oh yeah.
about the Wizard of Oz. How
Yeah.
did I not know this? That's
Oh,
hilarious.
it's a great paper. I like it. But see that it is the pattern of hysteria plays out. There's no way around it. So that, yes, Dorothy is hysterical. And that's what going to Oz means. And she's hysterical because it is so bleak in Kansas. She, you know, her parents died. She's an orphan. She's being raised by her aunt and uncle. And in the Frank Oz book, I mean, it is much
Brutal.
bleaker than the movie. I mean, they give her very little nurture, you know, empathy. And so the archetype of the wizard is constellated. And in her case, you know, the wizard is the father. I mean, to be Freudian about it, the wizard is the father. And it's sort of constellated because it's the archetypal father. It's what she needs. But her transference, there's a whole nother episode. Okay.
A whole nother
But
episode is transference.
on to again, he's a man. And so what's beautiful about the story is the whole thing when in the end she opens the curtain and sees the man behind the curtain.
So she sees that he's really a man and not this
And
archetype.
that breaking of the transference, right? Then she's upset. Says, you know, this is in the book, right? You are a very bad man.
She says
And
he's a very bad man.
oh yes, when she discovers, it's like, how could you do this to trick everybody? And he says, my dear, I'm not a very bad man. I'm actually a very good man. I'm just a very poor wizard.
Just a very poor wizard. Oh, that's
Now
great.
that gets it, right? Is that you can see that he knows that he is not the archetype, let's say. And that this projection or transference of Dorothy that created the wizard, that would be the constellating of the archetype in her head, right? I mean, in her head. And then she goes through and does all the things you do if you have a wizard. If you're relating to a wizard, yeah. Is that making sense now about how
It is,
that's a
yeah.
part of the unconscious, that there are a multitude, I mean, how many archetypes? I mean, many, many, that are unconscious patterns of
So
events, behavior.
it's kind of like manifesting. I mean, it's
Yes,
like you constellating and manifesting.
constellating, it's manifesting, right?
Yeah, I see similarities to that. And I think manifesting is a word that gets used a lot, but could maybe be understood under
But if you're not aware that
you're
it's happening,
manifesting something, yes.
it's happening. Again, back to this more unconscious person, we won't say names. These things just happen to me. I don't know why they happen, you know. I See what I mean?
Because they don't realize that they're manifesting it.
Yes.
And all of it's coming out of the unconscious
It
because of
is.
the either the like we talked the biological factor or there's some underlying thing that's sparking, that's constellating, manifesting this into a reality.
Right. So we have those. I guess now we have a list of four things, right? I mean, we have the personal unconscious, you know. We have instinctual functioning, and we have organic or organic functioning and disturbances of organic functioning. And now we're at complexes.
Complexes.
Okay.
Okay,
Our list is five because now,
what's the
and the fifth is constellating of the archetype.
Well, do you think the constellating of the archetype is an effect of the other four, or do you think it's its
No.
own thing?
It's its own thing. It's universal. Let's say the developmental stages of life. I guess, see, there's another episode on the developmental. So, I mean, you know, you have a child and you know that children go through developmental stages.
They do. Oh boy.
So the question is, how do they know to go through developmental stages?
Yeah, it just happens.
They don't know, right? They don't know. Well, see, now you're like our person who's like, oh,
Yeah,
it just
it just
happens.
happens.
I don't know why. It's just a, you know, it
I
happens.
can re imagine my 4-year-old in her little voice. I'm like, I don't know why.
Right.
It happens.
But it doesn't just happen. There is the
Right.
underlying pattern that is the human pattern, because it's universal and developmental,
And it's
a kind of growth in a certain period and another kind of growth in the next period. And also, way above it all, there is a kind of intelligence about how all of those developments fit together.
Right, the steps.
The
Because you can't
steps.
go to C before you do A.
Right. And again, how do you know that? And the answer is you don't know it, but it plays out. Whether you know it or not, it plays out. And even if you know it, it's going to play out. Like it, right? And then ju just to finish, the idea would be you do realize that the developmental stages of life don't stop
Yeah, like you
when
turn
we're
21 and you're like, I'm adult.
it's not only for kids
Yes,
that
exactly.
there are developmental phases that adults go through.
Yeah.
And
Well, I think the path gets a little less linear once you're an adult, but I think there are definitely still stages,
so
yeah.
I mean, you know, famously Erik Erikson, you know, described eight developmental phases
Phases.
from birth to old age, of which, right, old age is a developmental phase.
Yeah.
And see, there's the archetype. I mean, it's that you can't avoid it, even if you know that this is coming, because it's a phase everybody goes through.
Well,
But
yeah, we all get old. We can't
you and it
stop
come
that process.
and it happens in a certain pattern. See, that's the archetype part. It happens in a certain pattern. You will give your own answer, you know, your own individual unique way of going through it when it happens. Sure. I mean, yeah. But it will come.
Because everybody goes through it, unless you die prematurely, I guess. All right. Well, we've talked about a lot, Dad, but I'm going to just check in and see if there's anything else. We've answered my questions for the most part. We might talk about unconscious myths on our own episode here, but is there anything else that you think we really need to know for this baseline about the unconscious before we close out?
I would just finish with saying, instead of being so fearful, like Freud, of what is there, that it is actually freeing and makes life more interesting and wonderful to participate with the unconscious. Especially in these developmental aspects, or we talked about e ego and self, to not just be a passive writer, you know, like we just, well, I don't know where we're going or what we're doing, you know, I'm just here.
Along for the
Yeah.
ride.
As opposed to, there's still the ride, but then to be aware and participating during the ride. Well, at least to me, it makes life interesting.
Yeah, I think there's a certain curiosity, you know, being curious about the why we do things and the way that we do things. And I think just coming at it with a curious mind helps a lot, which we are both very blessed with having a very curious mind. So,
There you go.
all right. Well, thanks again, Dad, for talking about the unconscious with me. And it's definitely sparked. I have at least five different things written down in my notes now for us to cover in future episodes. So
Oh boy.
it's definitely a good gateway for that. But thanks again. And thank you guys for listening. And we'll be back next week for another episode.
Take care.
I hope you guys enjoyed our conversation on the unconscious. It definitely gave me a lot to think about, and I know we'll be revisiting this topic. If you want to learn more about us, go to our website, ajungianinnowitch.com. If you want to learn more about me, go to queenofcupsapothecary.com. And for more from Dad, head over to History of Ideas on YouTube. As always, feel free to reach out to us at ajungianinnowitch@gmail.com. I would love, love, love to get some listener questions to get Dad to answer and help him with his banter. So, thanks again, everybody. And I super appreciate you listening to us. And oh, and if you could be so kind as to leave us a review wherever you listen to your podcasts, I think it would really help us reach some new audience members. So I hope you enjoy the rest of your week. I hope if you are in the US, you had a wonderful Memorial Day, and we'll see you next week for another topic.